Let's start with Southern Delaware Alliance for Racial Justice Chairwoman Charlotte King. She is 82, and your piece notes that aside from attending marches in her youth, King has said she was never a member of any racial activism groups before the Southern Delaware Alliance for Racial Justice. So in talking to her, you know, what brought her to the issue of racial justice later in life when she started this group not that long ago, back in 2015?
Right. Well, what we talked about, you know, is Ms. King, she's a black woman, of course, and so she's experienced racism her entire life. Being an 82-year-old woman, that's a long time. And we talked a lot about different microaggressions, and she kind of said for her that eventually she got to a point in her life where she said, like, enough is enough. And she felt more inclined to speak out and to organize. And so she was actually president of the League of Women Voters before this group was formed in 2015. And so she was working with them already. And so she kind of was in that sphere of working with different people in the community and talking about different social issues. And so she heard about this new book, and it was called The New Jim Crow. It's about mass incarceration. I think I mentioned it in the story. And she had heard about it from her friend out of state, and she thought people would be really interested in it. So she gauged interest for a book club discussing it, and she was correct. There were a lot of people that were interested, and they met for 8 weeks to discuss the book, and it was really popular. And she said people had a really good time. They had very strong emotional reactions to the book because, you know, it's a very serious topic, mass incarceration of Black Americans. It hits home for a lot of people. And so she formed this Southern Delaware Alliance for Racial Justice out of that book club. And they do still actually have a separate book club, which they discuss similar books. So yeah, that was really where it came from, was the interest in that was just so high that she was like, well, why not start a group where we specifically address racism in the area and how it affects our lives here?
And in your piece, you note that, this group isn't the type that necessarily is focusing on marches and protests. So in talking to her, like, what is the approach of the Southern Delaware Alliance for Racial Justice? And what is that, I guess, how does Ms. King kind of use it to affect change in maybe in a way that, you know, isn't what people might normally see or normally think of in terms of protests and marches and things like that?
Right. Ms. King, her approach to racial equity is definitely through education and starting conversations. And, you know, marches and protests are certainly important to her, and she's participated in those before. But her approach really is to kind of unify the community and start those conversations. Like, we talked a lot about American history and how that ties to racism and the different forms of discrimination that have existed over the decades. And she really just wants to kind of end those stereotypes. And so the ways that they do that is they meet monthly at the Southern Delaware Alliance for Racial Justice, and they invite guest speakers like writers, activists, politicians, former police chiefs, former inmates, students, all types of different people with different perspectives on issues of race so that they can start timely conversations about how it affects our community and, you know, find a common ground of interest and ways that we can all agree, like, hey, this is a problem, so we should address it this way. And I think it's pretty effective, and I think it's interesting. Like, they had a Juneteenth panel, I know, and they had one on the 14th of this month. And they always invite interesting guests and such, like I said. And they do other efforts, too, in the community. Like, she established the Black Film Festival. It's at the Art Cinema Theater every year. She's hosted several expungement clinics over the year for nonviolent youth offenders. And it helps educate them about how they can get their criminal records cleared. And she actually does help. She helped a lot of them over the years get those criminal records expunged. So that's pretty cool. And she also offers a lot of scholarships to high school students. The Alliance, they do 10-plus scholarships every year to high school students, and they ask them to write about racial justice. And so through all these different types of methods, and there's lots of other stuff we talked about, too, that's really her goal, is to kind of change those preconceived ideas people have about race and try to start those conversations up.
I was going to say, that really interested me, too, that she had this kind of real interest in history and changing these misconceptions and misperceptions. Are there some specific misconceptions and misperceptions that she's trying to get at?
Right. So specifically, she's talking about race when she says that and the ways that Black Americans are viewed, especially over history. You know, one of the things I quoted her on was the Three-Fifths Compromise, which is part of the U.S. Constitution back when the United States was first made. And it just showed how, even from the beginning, it was like Black Americans were devalued to less than human. And so she thinks that racism is a taught behavior. You know, people are socialized into thinking that way about black people. It's part of our laws, part of our constitution, like I said. And so she thinks that by, like I said, through those education, that's how we can overcome it and acknowledge, like, hey, this is racist behavior. This is how racism exists in our world. And, like, how can we change that and stop having these misperceptions about black people, you know, being inferior, being criminals, and why they're wrong and where those views come from. And so, you know, she's, like we said, she's 82. So she has so much perspective on how that's, like, going on. And so it's really interesting talking to her about it.
And I was curious about that perspective that she has, because, as you said, she's 82. She has a very long view of all of this and the arc of this battle for racial equity. I'm curious, in your conversation, what does she have to say about what's going on right now and how it kind of fits into what she's seen over time and what she's hoping to do through the Southern Delaware Alliance for Racial Justice to kind of be part of this moment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she said she's been happy to see these new discussions of race and things like police brutality come up because, you know, this is what she's been trying to do for years now. She's been trying to start these conversations. And so she said to me she was excited to see more people involved in this. And she actually, the Southern Delaware Alliance for Racial Justice, initiated one of, if not the biggest protest in Rehoboth Beach earlier this summer, back in June. It was on by the Tanger outlets. And I was there reporting on that too. So I was there for it. And it was like hundreds of people there. And it was organized by Southern Delaware Alliance for Racial Justice, and they did have to pull out of their sponsorship the day of because they were getting pressure from police, essentially worried about looters coming, which did not happen. But they still attended the event just to show support, and she said she was so happy to see, like, the diversity of age and race, too, and how it was just all these people from the community coming together and really saying, you know, enough is enough, that racism is an issue and that we need to address it and be open about it because otherwise it's not going to be solved. And so she very much is involved in things like that going on at the moment and does care a lot. And she also, one of the things we talked about, the only like concern she really brought up about different race discussions that are happening now is reactionary legislation, which is something I mentioned in the story too. And we talked about specifically new legislation passed by the General Assembly to ban chokehold use by police. And she talked about different caveats that a lot of laws like that have and different loopholes. And, you know, it is true in that legislation, they have a part in it that says, and I had to read this myself for different reporting I did on it, you know, police can use chokeholds if they feel their life or another person's life is threatened. And so when she said to me is when you put loopholes in legislation like that, it takes away the power. And so she doesn't want to see legislation like that be passed. She wants to see stronger legislation in the future. But, you know, otherwise she's happy to see that we're making some type of progress. You know, showing up, even imperfectly, is better than not showing up. So,
the other woman you profiled was Delaware Division of Human Relations Director Ramona Fulman. And I thought it was interesting that she tapped into something that we've heard from a number of people during these protests, a kind of weariness of having to fight these battles. What did she have to say about that and how it relates to her work?
Right. So her approach to handling racism is a little bit different than Ms. King. So she works more on the systemic side, and she handles different complaints from people who've experienced housing discrimination and things like that, and how to enforce laws of discrimination. And so what we talked about is people like that who've had issues with housing discrimination, public access and such, a lot of times they are weary because that's a generational type of racism, and it carries over, you know. Black Americans are not just carrying the burden of the oppression they've experienced, but the burden of their parents and their grandparents and all their ancestors before them. And racism has existed for so long in America that they feel tired from that. And it infiltrates all aspects of their lives. You know, they can't find housing. They have trouble finding jobs. It's harder to get into universities. And so when she works with these people, a lot of times they are tired. But, you know, that's why her job is so important, because she's the one who's got to be there to know when discrimination is happening and when it's considered illegal and how to enforce those laws.
And she also noted in her conversation with you that these issues are kind of part of her personal journey to make a difference. So can you talk to us a little bit about how, you know, she was kind of able to relate the systemic work that she's doing to her own kind of personal journey?
Mm-hmm. So we talked more about her job and less about her personal background than I did with Ms. King. But, you know, one of the things we did say is that she said this to me, it's interesting how you can find like the wealthiest, most privileged, educated black man, and he'll still have a story about how he's been discriminated against. And so I think this definitely applies to her. You know, Ms. Fulman, she's a lawyer, actually. She went to law school. And so she's experienced all this discrimination in her life too, just like all the other Black Americans. You know, her parents would tell her these stories of discrimination they've experienced because they were educators and, you know, working in schools and what that's like. So it definitely is something that affects her personally, and that's part of the reason why she's here.
She also sees a connection between some of these racial inequity issues and gender discrimination. Did that come out in your conversation as well?
Yeah, so Ms. Fullman, she also worked with the League of Women Voters, both her and Ms. King. It's a pretty popular group, obviously, in the state. But she was part of that board for years before getting into the State Division of Human Relations, and so she has worked closely with gender discrimination. And another one of the big things that me and Ms. Fullman talked about were the intersectionality of discrimination. You can't ever just look at one aspect of discrimination because they're all related. You know, being a Black American is hard, but it becomes much harder when you're a Black woman, and also becomes continuously harder if you're an LGBT Black woman. And so you can't have one of those disparities without the other, right? And so, like, that's what she talked about, too, is she doesn't get the option of picking an issue that's most important to her in her job, because, you know, if someone can't get housing, then they're probably also having trouble getting a job. And if they can't get a job, it might be because they don't have a good educational background. And that's also hard to get involved in with racial discrimination. And, you know, none of those things can be changed. People aren't voting. And so she really views these all as tied together. And one of the things we talked about specific to gender was pay inequity. And I did quote her on this in my story, but, you know, how white women are paid less than white men, but also Black women are paid much more and Hispanic women are paid less more. And so it's yeah, they're all connected.
And so where did she kind of see things going in this moment when you talked to her a little bit about kind of the intersection of her life and experiences and her job and what's going on right now?
Right. So the ways that Ms. King and Ms. Fullman agree is they're very much both based on education, and they think that's the best way to fight against discrimination. And so, you know, her job, she works with what's legal and what's not as far as discrimination. And so she's going to keep working on that as far as handling complaints that she gets and mediating different situations of tension that people come to her with. And she said she also wants to focus more on fair economic opportunities because, again, that can affect so many parts of people's lives if they don't have enough money to support them. And she also, again, is interested in changing the education system in the ways that people are taught about, you know, racial discrimination in schools too. And I had a quote here written down. She said, "It requires an investment of your spirit, mind, and resources to end discrimination." And so I think that's really what she wants to do, is to keep dedicating her life to this and her work to this.
It's a great place to end it. Katie Rediford from the Delaware State News, we thank you so much for your time and for your reporting.
Thank you.